And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 659. Gonna keep talking some more fantasy baseball to get you ready for the 2024 season. We are in the heart of draft season. It is March. We are cranking things up. You know, DCs are kind of behind us, unless you're a degenerate like Vad Sedler, took his 13th DC right now just because he had to get one more. But it's OC season. It's almost main event season. It's auction season. We're doing it all. So I got a special guest joining me. I unfortunately missed him at the live barf draft this year because I was not able to attend. But I think you guys might know him, at least the voice of this individual, as he is the newest member of the FTN Baseball Pod, Fantasy Baseball Podcast, with the aforementioned Vlad Sedler. You can find him on Twitter at Booms62. Jason Anthony, how you doing, my man?
What's up, Bubba? No better time of the year than draft season, is there?
No, it's, I literally, you might have the same situation. I'm not going to talk for you, but I talk to people each day and I keep telling myself I'm done drafting. I almost committed to another draft Saturday. Like, it's just the itch of drafting is so great.
It is a serious addiction. You have to be really disciplined and not keep hopping in these slow drafts because they're so easy to just jump in and do another one. But then you get in the season, have to manage them, and then it's a whole nother story.
Yeah, it's a wild time. So it's like part of me is like, let's just get the season started. So I stopped drafting. But then once the season starts, it's a 6-month grind of fab. And that's a whole nother ballgame.
Yeah.
So let's kind of get into that thought process of we're going to get into how you're attacking the season later on. But let's just get to know Jason Anthony for a second. I guess like we talked before the show, we kind of got to know each other through Twitter and whatnot. You enjoy golf. Like, well, you're much better at it. We both enjoy golf. But like, give a little background on yourself and how you got into fantasy baseball.
Yeah, I actually played professional golf out of college on the Canadian tour for 4 years. Ended up not being for me, the travel, living out of a suitcase. I wasn't ready mentally, maturity there at that point. So it became a job and I really started to hate golf. Actually, I quit for a year, didn't touch a club. And then, you know, after about a year went by, I started playing again. Now I'm having a lot of fun doing it. So as far as fantasy goes, you know, grew up around baseball cards. I just love stats. I love baseball cards. I had that whole set, you know, growing up, had the sleeves with all the teams, Carney Lansford, Tony Phillips on the A's, just, you know, some of the ones that stick out. But I just love that. And, you know, I've always been a stats guy. I was a big time Warriors fan. And then when they were bad for all those years, I literally would follow the NBA draft so close because I want them to get better. So I can name every college that every NBA player went to at one point. So it just, this stuff kind of sticks with me. So when I found fantasy baseball, it just was like, wow, all this useless information in my head, I actually get to use now. So I just can't get enough of it. It is a passion. It is a labor of love. Like we were talking about. I love every minute of the research. I love the grind. I just love talking shop.
Yeah, it's the absolute best. And you mentioned the baseball cards. I actually just, when I get bored at Target, if they ever have any once in a while, I'll grab a couple packs just for fun to kind of open up and see what they got. And yeah, I got, my mom was so happy the day I got out of college and got into a living accommodation that I could store all the cards that were stuck at her house. So yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I remember those cards very vividly, the Carney Lansfords and all those of those days. But how long have you been doing the NFBC game? I know you go to Vegas now, and we were kind of joking off air that one day we'll get the big hit. But you talked about how much you like doing it. You're going to go here. I think it's next week. No, 2 weekends from now. So how long is the NFBC thing going for?
I think I've been doing the NFBC thing total for 7. I think I've been going to Vegas for 6. And it's funny, a quick little story. My first year in Vegas, the drafts were at the Aria, I believe. And I went with my buddy. And we're going up to we did an auction draft in a main event, and we're just nervous. We're looking around and we run into this guy in the hallway. We're just shooting, you know, talking about baseball. And how many drafts do you have? He's like, well, I have 4 auctions and 2 main events in the next 2 days. And we're like, what? And now I go to Vegas and I'm that guy now. You can't get enough of it. You know, you wake up, there's literally no time to gamble. You wake up, you do fantasy drafts, you take a break, you do another draft, you go out to dinner, you hang out with the guys, have some beers, go to bed, do it again the next day. So it is literally my favorite weekend of the year. I've made some incredible friends, and I hope you get out there at some point in the near future because it is an incredible event.
Yeah, one of these days, like I said, I will. I love how you just kind of built the weekend up there. It's a, I refer to it as a fantasy baseball business trip. It's like you said, guys aren't going to the casinos that much. They might, some guys might disappear to it, but, and I've heard the stories when you sit down at that, you know, Saturday morning main event table, there are a couple stragglers that come walking in that look like they hadn't slept from the night before. But for the most part, people are there to try to win a boatload of cash and see where it goes. Like James Anderson talked about it a couple weeks ago, that he's flying in and he's doing, I think, a Thursday and maybe a Friday morning draft or something, like super early, because he's flying out to a wedding. Like, literally, he's flying in, drafting, and leaving. It just kind of tells you the idea behind all this. But then you got, you know, Mike Masato's got his big parties, and, you know, Vlad and you guys at FTN are having the happy hour. So it's a cool deal for the community that's surrounded by probably the best part about fantasy baseball, the drafting. So, yeah, one of these days I will make the trip, and it'll be a ton of fun, and you guys will not even know I'm there. I'll just kind of stalk you guys while you're drafting, and then I'll share some beers with you all afterwards.
Well, and the best part about it, Bubba, is for anybody that hasn't gone or is thinking about going or is going for the first time, every single person there just wants to talk baseball. They're us. So I've made friends that I didn't know from first going that are close friends now, because we just talk baseball. So go up and talk to whoever. Everybody wants to talk shop. It doesn't matter how good they are. I mean, Phil Dussault is Dussault. I can't pronounce his last name, but he is literally one of the nicest guys, and probably intimidating with his record, but he'll share anything with you. It's just such a great environment of people.
Yep. It's like we talk about with First Pitch Arizona as well. It's just, people go to these events to Vegas, to Arizona, whatever, just to talk baseball, because we all have something in common. So it's a great thing that, we'll have to have some fun with it. I actually almost had them, because they have the 750 OCs, and we almost convinced them to set up some 350s,
right,
that they wouldn't set up tables for us, but they said they'd make a room for us, and we could sit like at the sportsbook with our laptops and draft live. And I'm like, yeah, like even Gilds was kind of like itching at that, going, okay, I could probably swing one of those. And that would be a lot of fun too. So we're trying to expand it to not just the highest stakes events, which is Vegas alone. That's what it's for, but it's going to be awesome, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some recent news notes from spring training. It's the fun part about this, Jason. It's always, okay, you need to take the news in, but how do we not overreact to spring training news? Because some of it's kind of just fluff, you know, guys threw an inning, or, you know, a guy hit a home run off a pitcher that'll be in, you know, Double A in 2 weeks or stuff like that. What do we take for, but, you know, we're getting closer to the season now. We're a couple weeks away, so guys are making their second starts. We're seeing guys play into the fifth inning or so. We're seeing a little more to it. So we're getting some news, and some news we got doesn't even matter how, you know, how serious the game was, is Lucas Giolito looks like he's having Tommy John surgery. That's not official yet, but everything points to it. He's got the UCL injury with the forearm strain. You know, I'm not a doctor, you're not a doctor, but I think we've seen this enough. It usually leads to one thing. They're going to get the second opinion, of course. So the biggest question, you know, Giolito's pretty much off the board. What are you thinking about this rotation? Because you have Pivetta leading the way. Cutter Crawford's one of the talks of the town. Yeah, Brian Bay was about to get a massive extension, it sounds like. But then there's like Whitlock. There's Houck. There's Winkowski or something like that, like y'all mispronounce all the time. How are you trying to approach this, if you are? But I know you play deep leagues, so 15-team leagues. These names do come up. So how are you looking at this Red Sox rotation?
Yeah, I mean, for every piece of news, there's an opportunity. I call it the overreaction season, but it's reaction season, because you have to make the moves in your rankings and kind of decipher where value can be had. You have Whitlock and Houck, I think, are the two big names from that. I still believe Jordan Montgomery is going to sign there. It makes too much sense to me why he hasn't signed there. I think I saw in the betting odds that he was 1-to-1 betting odds to go there at one point, and that could not be any worse at the moment. But I actually was drafting Whitlock a little bit in deeper leagues. I thought he might close, because I thought they were going to trade Kenley Jansen. But yeah, I just watched his start yesterday. Stretch out to 3 innings. Looks good. So he looks like he's going to be in the rotation. I guess it's him and Towner Houck, unless Montgomery signs. I do like both those arms, though.
Yeah, I like them quite a bit. I usually use the OC ADP just to kind of keep it 12-team centric for a lot of listeners. But you know, to each their own. But just over the last week of OCs, there's been 21 drafts, because the people are going crazy this time of year. It's like 3 drafts a night. But Tanner Houck has gone at 354, as high as 304. So that's an in-game piece in a 12 normal pick in a 15. And Whitlock is 337, as high as 297. So looks like people are favoring Whitlock over Houck, but I think both could have some leverage for sure. I'm with you on that. All right, let's talk about our Giants. let's have some fun with this one. They made a move. I was shocked. I kind of sarcastically tongue-in-cheek tweeted it when it came out. They signed Matt Chapman. Love him or hate him, they signed Matt Chapman. We know he's got, you know, the barrel rates through the roofs. We heard Scott Ginstead talk about that for years with the A's. He just can't pull the baseball, it feels like, enough to totally take full advantage of it. But you got Chapman, and you got an ADP right now, Jason, of 289, as high as 233 now. How are we feeling about Chapman in the Bay Area?
I'm excited. You know, the Giants got a lot of crap the last couple of years for all their free agent faux pas or mess ups, but they've spent a ton of money this offseason, and it almost seems like a mini rebuild while trying to stay competitive. I can't remember any time the Giants have actually rebuilt. But, you know, you look at the arms they have, Matt Chapman makes them a lot more interesting. JD Davis was actually decent defensively last year, but decent is not Matt Chapman. He is elite. With Webb, I mean, we look at the Giants defense last year and how good Logan Webb was with all the contact he pitches to. It didn't make a lot of sense. So if he can repeat that, his numbers are going to get even better. And then you have Alex Cobb when he comes back from his hip injury. You have Jordan Hicks, who likes, you know, throws the two seamer on the ground. So I think the biggest impact is for the pitchers with the Giants more than anything. And I personally like Chapman a little bit. I think he got really unlucky last year, but you and Scott hit the nail on the head. He's barreling balls, but he's not pulling them. And San Francisco is probably the worst park in the majors to not pull barrels, because then you're looking at Triples Alley out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. As long as he's not, you know, I guess doubles will work, hitting fifth or whatever. If you look at the projected lineups right now, and people have him hitting, you know, fifth, looks like fifth or sixth most days. And the lineup's actually a little better now with even him at fifth or sixth. But more importantly, the defense, like you mentioned, elite, elite defensive third baseman. You mentioned Jordan Hicks, and as a guy that follows the Bay Area here, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Hicks? Because he's a guy that early on, I'm like, it's going to take forever to stretch him out. What are we going to get? But the Giants seem like they've been pretty aggressive with it here in this spring training. He has an ADP of 300, as high as 250 over the last week. Is Jordan Hicks a guy that interests you at all? Because I know you play more 15s than 12s, I believe. Could be wrong. But that kind of like floor is not there maybe with Hicks. But what are your thoughts on Jordan Hicks?
I play a little bit of 12s. I'm definitely more focused on the 15s, but we can talk 12-team focus. I'm interested in the 12s. Everybody kind of poo-pooed it when they did it. Oh, this isn't going to work. He's never been able to do it. And I listened to an interview with him, and he's like, I've never had a chance to actually prepare as a starter. So he was really excited to actually be able to prepare as a starter. I'm not as worried about the injury for some reason. I'm more worried about the walk rate. If he can't throw the ball over the plate, he's not going to last more than three or four innings, and it's just going to get ugly. But if he can harness the strike zone a little bit, throwing, you know, an easy 98, 99 instead of 102, 103, I think there's an upside there for a lot of strikeouts and some decent, actually good ERA and some questionable whip.
Yep, I'm with you. I've been kind of taking some shots. I've been doing actually a few more 15s of late, weirdly enough. But I've been taking my chances with him, just thinking there might be a time when he's just going to be a drop, because I don't know if the innings will be there eventually or whatnot. But I'll take the K upside, and I agree with the ratios. If they can just incorporate the third pitch, and they'll have to temper down the velocity, like you said, he can't sustain that 100 the whole way like he was doing, or the high 90s like he was doing. Then you mentioned Cobb. I have Cobb everywhere. I'm a big fan. He's ahead of schedule, so that's a fun one as well. This one should be simple, but I just want to bring it up for those if you've been sleeping under a rock for some reason. Ronald Acuña Jr. scared the world with his knee injury, flying to L.A. to get it looked at. Came back, mild irritation, supposed to be ready by opening day. Over that weekend when the speculation was, oh, no, he actually didn't go number one in a couple drafts. So those people got to be thinking, how'd that feel? But I get the concern. Are you cool with Acuña's status now? Or are you still kind of like, yeah, I don't know, this still doesn't feel right?
No, I think Vlad had the best tweet when he said, if you passed on Acuña this weekend when you had the number one pick because of the question mark, you are not getting another number one pick later. It's just how it works. So he's the hands down number one, even with the question mark. He was going to have some regression. So he stole 72 bases last year, so he only steals 60 this year. Shucks. He's hands down the number one player.
Yeah, he is for me too. I'm going to keep taking that chance. And even if he plays 100, it's like the old days with the Trout comment. If he plays 140, he's still probably the best player in baseball. So they can give him a few days off, and it really won't change things a ton. Let's talk Kevin Gausman, though. Shoulder irritation. He's already throwing on flat ground. Looks to be coming, you know, maybe back sometime next week to throw off the mound again. ADP still 35, not a big hit for him yet. What are your thoughts on Gausman? Because, you know, anytime you hear shoulder injury, there's got to be a little concern.
Former Giant great, Kevin Gausman, right? It was interesting when he was in draft season before the injury. I was actually looking for a reason to move him down a little bit. I don't know what it was. He's been so good the last couple of years. Maybe it's the whip, that 118 last year, the 124 the year before, that unsustainable BABIP that kind of sustains itself with him. It's strange. I've dropped him down just in the next tier right now until I get some more news. Luckily, the main event drafts for me don't start for another couple weeks, so I get a little more data to kind of make that decision on. I'm not too concerned, but I think I did ding him a little bit.
Yeah, I know I pushed him down just a little bit in my rankings, not like crazy down, because I still think he's a pretty darn elite pitcher, but until I see him throwing again, like I take it in that your SP1 with potential shoulder issues is not a comfortable place to be this early in draft season, so I'm kind of with you on that one. Cedric Mullins is a name that more people are into this year than I expected. Maybe I was just naive because he was platooning early, but he actually finished rather strong in 2023, which surprised me once Bloomfield opened my eyes to that. He suffered a hamstring injury, left the game early the other day, but all reports are that the scans came back fine. It was more of a cramp than an actual hamstring injury was the report on Wednesday. He should be back in games in a couple of days, so not a ton to worry about there, but just for fun, what are your thoughts on Cedric Mullins this year? Because not too far removed from 30-30, but he definitely hasn't been that guy the last 2 years.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but a cramp sure doesn't sound like a hamstring injury, so there's something weird going on there. If Justin
I get
Mason...
cramps. I'm 40 and get cramps. I haven't had a hamstring injury.
If Justin Mason's listening right now, you're not going to ever get a 30-30 season from Cedric Mullins again. He has fallen off a cliff, his batting skills. He's still playing good defense, still hits right-handers well, but he cannot hit lefties at all. And I think he's headed for a platoon role, even if healthy. I think Jorge Mateo actually might be a little sneaky this year because of that.
Yeah, I think that's a great call with Jorge Mateo. That could be a fun one as well. Like when you look at the Baltimore lineup, I'll look and see what Mr. Kurland has going on these days at MLB playing time. But like versus righties, he has Cedric. Did he take him out of the lineup? No, he's got Cedric leading off. But versus lefties, he has Cedric batting ninth with a potential platoon with Mateo, like you said. So that could be interesting. And again, if the injuries do sustain with Cedric, the other thing to eventually you got Couser crushing baseballs, you got Kesson Hierstedt. Like they have. Baltimore has outfielders to play with if all else fails too. So Ced worries me. If there ever was, like you said, hamstring injury, now cramp, something's not right there in Baltimore. So keep an eye on that one. I'm not thinking that one's out of the woods just yet.
Yeah.
Sonny Gray now, he's got a hamstring injury, and they are concerned he won't be completely ready for opening day just yet. Like they're not worried about him missing a ton of time, but just taking like the week off or whatever is one less start in the spring to get him stretched out for regular season. So we'll see how that plays out. His ADP is 127 right now, Jason. Sonny Gray coming off his best year pretty much of his career, if not in a darn long time, if someone wants to argue otherwise. He was good before, but 184 innings with the 2.8 ERA. It's pretty darn good in Minnesota. So what's your thoughts on Sonny Gray and this hamstring injury right now?
Yeah, he was a little overpriced before the injury. I'm really interested to see where he settles in with the news because it might be a buy the dip opportunity. I'm really not super concerned with a pitcher with a hamstring, as long as they're not calling it a cramp. But I think I could be interested, but it'd have to be at the right cost because, you know, starting with a guy on the IL that has a history of injuries is not usually the best recipe. I don't believe anybody was drafting him thinking he was going to go 182 innings again. So maybe this is an early blip and he stays healthy. So it's kind of, I guess, wait and see for me.
Yeah, he has over the last week 21 drafts, so some of these obviously have been after the injury. He's gone as low as 181. So that's where you start kind of dipping into the world of there might be some potential value in that scenario at 181. So I'm with you there. Braxton Garrett, this one sounds a little more ominous, and this stinks because I have a lot of early Braxton Garrett shares. So I've avoided most of the injuries. This one's kind of hitting close to home right now. Garrett has a pretty severe shoulder injury. It looks like shoulder soreness. They're saying ADP is 241. He's gone as low as 359 of late. So what are our thoughts on Braxton Garrett, who we saw have a couple amazing runs last season?
Yeah, he free fell on the barf draft that we did. Nobody really wanted to touch him at the time with the news. I unless I was missing something, I thought he was starting to throw live batting practice, so the news was getting better. Has there been something new as far as a shoulder?
Check again. I'll check here. Because, yeah, when I looked, Tuesday, I had not seen that yet, but that's very possible that could be taking place here. Told the media this morning Braxton Garrett is unlikely to start the season in the rotation. He has been behind due to a shoulder issue. That's all they're saying right now. That's what Craig Mish tweeted out. Okay. They didn't say he's gonna be out for a long time, just unlikely ready by opening day. So that is more promising than it was recently.
Yeah, but shoulder issues for a Marlins pitcher with already limited upside true. Team context is very a little scary. True. I love Braxton Garrett last year. He was a guy I highlighted before the draft. He wasn't getting drafted, but once he was getting called up, I got him on probably 80% of my FAB teams last year, and he was fantastic other than that one mercy rule start against the Braves where they left him out there to die for 12 runs or something.
The worst fantasy feeling on the planet.
It was just the worst. But he still ended up with like a 3.70 ERA, which is really impressive for how bad that start was. So he's kind of an avoid right now. He'd have to be down past 300 for me to really have any interest to take a shot on him to stash him.
Yeah, since the injury popped up, I've been kind of off the Braxton Garrett train, but a train I was liking even before Braxton's injury, and then the way he's performing in the spring and with the injury now. Are we buying back into AJ Puck as a starter, Jason? Because yes. His ADP is 309, as high as 273 over the last week. And even at that price, I'm willing to take the gamble, even if it was just a gamble. But I'm loving what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, he's been electric in spring training. Again, it's spring training, but the fact they're stretching him out, the pedigree, and you know, in a 12-team league, if you can get 2 months of health out of him and then move on, it's a huge win because he's going to be good when he pitches, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think he's going to be good when he pitches. They're actually the part that I'm really liking seeing is they're mixing the pitch mix up. They've added a pitch, like they're making him a starter now, which is we saw what they did with Lizardo. And if you're an A's fan, this could really sting real quick because that was supposed to be your future 1-2 punch, and that might be happening in Miami. So, the A's fans are probably numb to everything by now, anyway. So,
it's not the only thing stinging.
Yeah, I want to say now that I think about it, they're probably rooting for him to do well over there because they're not stuck in Oakland anymore. Shane Boz, this is one, Jason. Maybe you were on Shane Boz before, so I apologize, but I've never understood there was like a massive "we love Shane Boz" movement early on, like a few months ago. Never understood it because of his career innings, coming back from injuries, and all these things. I just didn't know how well he'd do. And now he's got the oblique injury from lifting. That's lesson to the kids, you know, don't lift weights, I guess. But Shane Boz, ADP of 267. How are we feeling?
I agree with you. There was no reason for him to be going where he was. And now he's got an oblique injury without throwing. This guy is a walking medical suitcase, as you know the NFBC well. The skills are elite. He is a really fun pitcher, and I think everybody's just dreaming on, you know, the Tyler Glasnow type upside with that arm. But I think we're looking at next year at this point now.
Yep, I'm with you there. It's a next year thing, and I just hope he comes back this year and somehow squeezes in 75 to 100 innings. Then I'll be interested come next year. Like, he just needs to build up that arm strength for next season. I'm 100% with you on that. Tommy Edman, another guy that I was kind of wondering why the early hype train was there, because he had the wrist surgery, which, okay, good. He tried to fix the issue. Still not swinging a bat yet. It's March 6th as we record. Still not swinging a bat. So he's looking highly unlikely to start opening day, and the setbacks just continue on, which is kind of obviously not great. ADP is now 208, as low as 265 over the last week. We know the multi-position eligibility is great. We know when he plays, he steals tons of bases. But I don't know what he's playing, Jason. So what are our thoughts on Tommy Edman right now?
Yeah, I just read some good news on him that he was starting to either take batting practice and fielding, but he was starting to progress. I don't believe he's going to be ready for opening day. I do believe there's a little buying opportunity here. People are worried about the wrist and the power. He's not a power guy. He's a speed guy. So possibly he leans into his speed a little more. They really don't have a lot of options on that team. They need him to play. They have Carlson, who is really not very good a baseball player. And then if Mason Wynn struggles, he's their backup shortstop too. Yep. So they have a lot tied into Tommy Edman. And I think, you know, I just took him in an OC that he fell, I think maybe to his max pick. It was, it really felt right at the time, especially with the speed. It's hard to find that late.
And a couple of things you mentioned there, which is clutch when he is healthy. They love his defense in center field because Dylan Carlson ain't it. That's for sure. So they want that defense out there. And then the other part is he is Mason Wynn's backup. And as much as we love Mason Wynn, and I had Matt Thompson on for my Cardinals preview, he talked about it, like Mason Wynn's good, but even Matt Thompson, who's a Cardinals guy and a prospect guy, thinks Mason Wynn's like a year away, like not quite there just yet. So there's, if he struggles, he could go back to AAA. Not likely, but he could. And if he does, Edmund slides into that and gets some more of that, and there goes your multi-position, just continues to roll with Tommy Edman. So I've never been a big Edman guy, but that was also because he cost a lot, and I wasn't a fan of the profile then. Like you mentioned, if he falls, there could be a buy-in opportunity, you know, around 240, 250 in an OC especially. You're looking middle infielder, fifth outfielder, who knows, and the comparison players at that point, big difference from Tommy Edman. So yeah. I could see the argument for sure. David Bednar. He's dealing with lat tightness. He said he's not worried. Of course he's going to say he's not worried. That's how this goes. But the team's taking it slow, they say. You got Aroldis Chapman, who they signed. What are your thoughts on this whole Pittsburgh bullpen situation?
Yeah, I think if Chapman did not sign there, I would not be concerned. But if he's behind it all, if Bednar's behind it all, and Chapman gets rolling with a closer gig, are they just going to pull him out of it? It's one of those things, and it's the Pirates. He got 38 out of the 42 saves last year. That number is astronomical for the save percentage. So I'm dropping him down a bit. I was interested to start the year. Guy's got he's just a bulldog on the mound, which I just love. He just says, here, hit it, and he just throws it right by you. But with that injury, it's definitely going to knock him a couple pegs for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I loved Bednar because he was just a steady, just 25 to 30 saves, strikeouts ratios, no BS. Probably won't get traded even though we think he will because there's so many options left. This injury pretty much takes me out of that pool right now, which sucks to see. Yuri Perez, they said it might be a blister. You even mentioned, is it a blister? Could be a fingernail, which is very possible. The biggest thing, both could be related to what this is going to say, is Craig Mish mentioned he's trying new grips on his pitches. And for anybody that's played baseball or worked with a shovel or done anything, when you do something enough, you create blisters, which then create calluses. If you look at any pitcher's hands, they have a ton of calluses on. Like you played golf. I know exactly where my golf calluses go on my hand if you hit enough golf balls. And that's just development. Like you get those first blisters, it sucks. You've got to power through it. You build the callus, you go. So Yuri's going through that is the way I see it. How is that affecting your potential draft and interest in Yuri Perez? Because eventually, I think this is going to be fine, but I could be just optimistic here.
I'm optimistic as well. I love the arm. I still think we're worried about an innings max this year. Yeah. Could be their way to kind of manage that a little bit, though. You're not really projecting him for more than 140, 150 innings anyways. So if he's able to build that endurance up with, like you said, the calluses, if it is a blister or even a cracked fingernail, the arm is just electric. But it goes back to the Marlins. How much do you want to invest in that with a guy that might be missing time?
Yep, 100% agree. In the range where Yuri Perez is going, some of the pitchers, I want to get your thoughts. Yuri Perez or Blake Snell?
I'm extremely worried about Snell. That just smells like a dumpster fire. And the Giants might sign him and it might work out, but you have a guy coming off a Cy Young year that did it already and he struggled the next year and then getting out of routine, coming into camp late, trying to build up his arm, trying to impress. It could be a short-term deal. It could be a long-term deal. I'm taking Yuri easy on that.
What about Yuri and Cole Reagans?
That's a fun one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm taking Jiří, but it's close. Reagans is flying up the board, and
he's flying up the board.
I got to see where he's going to fall on my rankings.
Last one I'll give you is his teammate Jiří and Jesús Luzardo,
the Jesus Lizard.
Yes.
I'm Luzardo there.
I'm huge on Luzardo this year, so I was actually surprised to see that they're only about four ADP picks apart. But I will say Jiří, since this news has dropped, has gone as low as 109. So there might be a pretty nice buying opportunity when all things considered. But right now, if you just go off of ADP, they're right next to each other, and that kind of surprises me.
Yeah.
Josh Jung is progressing nicely. He had that early calf injury, but he's already doing the baseball activities. They actually expect him to be ready by opening day. Young had the injuries in previous seasons, but when healthy, has been a beast. His ADP is 139, as high as 97, as low as 200 in just the last week. That's called a lot of volatility, folks. So what's your thoughts on Josh Jung?
I was kind of out on him entering the year, and the injury kind of knocked him down. I'm more of a Jake Berger guy who's going a little later. I think that power from Berger plays the lineup for Texas, and Jung in it is really good, and he got through his rookie year, so there's going to be skills growth there. So I might need to relook at that. I probably got to move him back up with the injury news. I just got to figure out how high I'm going to move him now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Kind of figure out how the Jung was great because he was going around Chapman last year at like around 180 to 200, I think, something like that, give or take. That was fun. This 139 area, not as fun. So that makes it a little tricky. Like, I like the Berger, even Ke'Bryan Hayes, I'll take some chances on and see where things go. So it is a little trickier this year with Josh Jung. Vaughn Grissom, many people wanted the prospect thing to develop last year in Atlanta. Did not. He traded to Boston. Hey, they have an opening at second base. Perfect. Vaughn Grissom will get some eligibility there. Now Vaughn Grissom's hurt and unlikely for opening day, but they're saying it won't be too long. Like, it's a short thing. It should be good to go. Should is the key word in this one. ADP's 269. How are we feeling about Vaughn Grissom?
I kind of feel bad for the guy. He finally gets an opportunity to play, and then it's a hammy injury. I was reading that he wasn't going to be ready. So that
he's not going to be ready for opening day, but it's soon. Shortly after, I think, is what that's what I read. Could be wrong. That's the beauty of spring training right now.
Yeah. And, you know, what is shortly after? I mean, that's the whole scary part with deciphering injuries. You know, we've learned the hard lesson as fantasy players that it's always on the long term of the projected injuries. You know, when they say 2 to 4 weeks, it's 5 weeks. And we always want to be that eternal optimist that, oh, at 2 weeks, he's going to be back. And then you stash him, and you end up having to drop him before you even get to use him. So I would just be a little careful about the leg injury without even playing for the Red Sox yet.
Okay, here's the latest I'm reading. This was March 2nd, so maybe things have changed. But severe is a groin injury. Severity of his injury isn't yet known. So the opening day is doubtful. That's basically what the article said.
Maybe it's a cramp.
If he's in Baltimore, it would be a cramp, probably. That is definitely true. That's hilarious. Cramp. That's unbelievable. Do you have any interest in like the Pablo Lopez's or whoever kind of sets in for a few weeks? I'm kind of just like, whatever. But maybe in a deep format, you got some interest there.
Yeah, I'd have to kind of look and see. At the moment, I do not. There's other options, I think. Even in 15s that I'm kind of attacking before going that route.
I agree with you there. Let's go to Ian Happ here. Chicago Cubbies. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. Again, though, he's saying he's going to take BP on Wednesday. So he took BP today. All signs point to things going in the right direction for him. But what's your thoughts on Ian Happ?
Happ's that boring guy nobody ever wants. If he's on the field playing spring training games before the season, I'm back in. But I'd have to see that if he's still kind of working through it. I'd probably have to move him down even more and see where he goes. Again, you're looking for buying opportunities. You're looking for pockets of value. And injuries do create that. They create more risk. And what's the payout if you succeed in that risk? So I'd have to see him on the field before I draft.
Sounds like you and I have a lot of similarities in the risk taking on these draft boards. I need a good drop to think about it, because we're going to have plenty of injuries this year. So like Scott Pianowski used to say, why draft already injured players? It's just one of those things. And Happ's one of those guys that always makes you laugh because he's super talented. I agree. Like, you're going to get some good production if he's on the field. But it's like, is it going to be a power season or a batting average season? It seems like it's one or the other for him. Regardless, he'll steal and he'll score runs and stuff. But put the whole five categories together one year, that would be absolutely outstanding. Let's talk Justin Verlander, a guy that I just pretty much didn't draft all season. And now he's going to start the year on the IL. You know, velocity kind of has been dropping. He strikeouts have been dropping last season. Still gets you decent ratios, though, if that's what you want. What are your thoughts on Verlander?
I think those ratios might actually start to suffer this year, too, based on the predictors that I saw last year. I had no interest before the injury, and now at a 41-year-old coming off a shoulder injury, I have even less interest. I have him as my 86th-ranked starting pitcher, so if anybody's drafting with me, they can have him.
Yep, I'm with you. He literally pretty much crossed off my board if I had a choice to do so. That would be the scenario I'd be living in. Josh Lowe, this is a very interesting one. He's progressing well, but still not ready to do baseball activities at this point in time from what I just read as we speak. And Josh Lowe's got that ADP of 86, got as low as 120 of late. So how are we feeling on that? Because the big season last year, optimism heading into this year, and now he's hurt.
Yeah, you got that post-hype sleeper last year that really went nuts, and I missed the boat on him. And I was a year early and then paid the price by not being on last year. I was interested this year before the injury. There's just where he's going now is again around a lot safer guys. I thought the dip would have been further. I thought it would have settled in around pick 120, not pick 80. So I'm still passing unless he continues to fall. Just possible platoon bat, hip injury. Is he going to run as much? You're talking speed. I don't know what that entails.
Yeah, like I'm a Randy Rosarena guy through and through, so I was kind of stuck on him. Like Josh Lowe is kind of enticing for the skills before he got hurt, for the skills that we saw. I was worried about the platoons. You look like his last month of the year, he seemed to play a little more, but then Manny Margot was hurt at the same time, so is that why he played more? I had a million questions with Josh Lowe that made it so tough to draft him. This helps me out a lot. Just be like, okay, we're just going to move on from this scenario, because he does look like if he's healthy, he's a fantasy game changer if he were to play every day, but that big if. In that regard, let's head to the mound. A couple of performances on Wednesday. Two names that have been kind of creeping up the ADP department: Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers and Carlos Rodon of the Yankees. Both had some rough starts there on Wednesday. Yamamoto gave up a handful of runs, a couple home runs as well. Rodon, similarities there. Rodon's velocity was down. I saw that. That was concerning, but he said, oh, it was okay. I was able to navigate. Just didn't have my fastball. I'm like, okay, whatever, Chief. So how are we feeling about this Yamamoto, Carlos Rodon situation? Again, spring training, these starts will happen, but it was a big difference from what we saw last time out.
Yeah, these overreactions drive me nuts. Yeah. I mean, Yamamoto was, you know, God's gift to pitchers after his last start, and he was going number four in drafts, ahead of Wheeler at some drafts, and now he did this. He's going to fall back. You know, there's going to be ups and downs through any season. Rodon, I'm monitoring closely. The velocity scares me a little bit. He's still throwing 93, and that's kind of where he normally sits in spring, so I'm not extremely worried, but he definitely was not locating his fastball either. So it just, I actually got a chance to watch the first couple innings of that game, and he did not look like the sharp Carlos Rodon that I was hoping to see.
Yeah, Rodon's a fun one. His ADP is 125 this past week, as high as 109, as low as 148. And I don't go crazy off of spring stuff, but just to kind of see him healthy, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to start taking some chances here and there, especially in auctions. I took a chance in one auction because he kind of came in at like 12, like 13, 14 bucks, something like that. I'm like, okay, I'll take a chance, because if he does come back healthy, he is great. It's a big if. Like, I love Chris Sale. I love what Chris Sale is doing. I believe a lot more in what Chris Sale is going to do this season than Carlos Rodon right now. But similar kind of trajectory thought process is what I'm trying to go through there. But then this kind of outing from Rodon makes me not jump off the ship, but kind of take a step back and watch things. And if you, like I just mentioned, his ADP over the last week, I think a lot of people are doing that. It's kind of all over the board. It's not real tight, as they say. So it's one of those, if he kind of falls, he kind of comes onto your radar, but you're not reaching for him thing. I'm curious to see how the next round of drafts go the next few days before his next outing in spring. But he could be one of those guys. He's volatile the whole offseason. Yamamoto, I'm not worried about at all. Not worried about him one bit.
You said it with Rodon. I mean, if he's healthy, he was going in the top of the second round last year. Yep. What's changed other than an injury plagued season?
Yeah, because we saw it in San Francisco. Because I've always been scared of his. He's been injury prone throughout his career, but he put together a couple solid years of health, and when he did that, amazing. So it's just what's your risk, what's your reward, and if he falls a little bit over these weekend drafts, jump on it, have some fun with it is what I would recommend.
Yeah, it's worth the risk.
Yep, 100%. Nick Lodolo, this one is concerning to me. Maybe I'm again reading into this wrong, but you got Nick Lodolo, who had the crazy leg injuries last year, like not shin, but that region down there, had to have surgeries and get worked on. And I don't even know if he had surgeries, got worked on, comes back, arm's fine, he's throwing, but his leg still isn't 100%. So he's seen a specialist. That result has not come back yet. And that was on, I thought, Monday. Still haven't seen anything on that. His ADP is 277, as high as 206, as low as 347. So you talk about all over the board. I've just been out because if he still can't plant on his leg, I don't know what good he is to me. But when healthy, the dude's a monster. And if he's going at 340, maybe it's worth a shot. So how are you feeling on Nick Lodolo?
It's kind of a crazy story, right? Yeah. I'm pretty sure the offseason's 6 months long and we're still talking about the same injury he was dealing with.
It's but crazy.
The even crazier part is he says he pitches fine. It's the next day recovery. It doesn't bother him at all when he's throwing. So what does that mean? Is he going to pitch and then just ice bath the next day? An arm that is just electric. If he's pitching, I'm kind of interested, but that is just the strangest injury, and I don't really know how to decipher it. Because if he wasn't throwing because his leg was bothering him, okay, that's an easy cross off. But he's actually pitching, and he's ramping up, and he's not recovering properly. So I don't really know what that means. But if you're risk tolerant, I think it's worth a shot there because the strikeouts are just massive with him. Him and Hunter Green were kind of compared next to each other last year as far as the strikeout numbers before everything hit the fan for both of them.
It makes you almost wonder if he's going to be better set for a part with an opener or back end of a bullpen, or because maybe it's just like fewer innings, quicker recovery, back out there thing. That's where my concern is, I guess, is, not even just innings, just what are we going to get out of like the workload for Chris or from Nick Lodolo? But like you said, when he's out there, it was him and Hunter Green going next to each other in drafts last year. They were like, it was both strikeout machines, and Lodolo's the better pitcher, it feels like. So see how that plays out for sure. Last bit of news here, and there's probably much, much more. It's always something, fluff pieces and everything out there this time of year. But this is a good one that you brought up there because I kind of overlooked it. But Edwin Diaz said he's still ramping up at 98 miles an hour. What are your thoughts on Edwin? Because I'm excited about him this year, thinking it's just a knee injury, not a leg or an arm injury. But if he's still ramping up at 98, what are we getting at Edwin Diaz?
Yeah, I've had him as my closer one and been drafting him aggressively. That ramping up at 98 kind of sounds like an oxymoron, right? Like a tall midget or a cheap lawyer. So I don't really – I think I'm fine with it. Like you said, it was coming off a leg injury, not an arm injury. But he hasn't thrown in a long time since the WBC. So I'm hoping, I guess, fingers crossed that this is good news, not concerning news, saying he's ramping up. But it'll be interesting how his ADP settles come closer to the season.
Yeah, that'll be the fun part, because if you look at Edwin right now, ADP is 47, as high as 33, as low as 59. He's going after the where's the last closer in front of him? He's actually up here in the closer world. I'm impressed over the last
Williams draft. Is above him. And then Duran's been going pretty close to him too.
As I'm scrolling around here, there's not that many though. He's got over the last week, he is the closer one in OCs. He is the closer one. Devin Williams is going two picks after him. Then Josh Hader's right after that. And then Duran after that. So yeah, Edwin has moved up to closer one as he ramps up. So you can get on it while you can, type scenario. Don't hate that worried at all. Nope, I'm not worried either. If he's throwing 98, let's roll. Like, I'm in. I'm more worried about the Mets winning games. Let's get to that part of it.
If the Pirates can do it, the Mets can.
Bingo. All right, let's get some of your thoughts here. You know, there's, like I said, plenty of news. I'll cover that with other people when more comes out and, you know, guys get demoted and all that fun stuff. But I want to get your thoughts. How many drafts have you done so far getting ready for the stretch run here in Vegas?
I think I've done 6 OCs and 4 DCs.
I love it.
So now I'm just 15-team focus now moving forward. I wanted to get the OCs out of the way because it's such a different mindset drafting the 12. And managing them going back and forth is a whole nother story. But I'm really getting ready for the – I'm doing 4 main events, 2 with Matt Modica and 2 solo. Nice. So we're going to do 2 in Vegas together, and then I'm going to do 2 online by myself.
That's going to be awesome. You get the draft with Matty Mo in Vegas. My goodness, that'll be a scene out of Goodfellas. So that'll be fun. Yeah, 6 OCs. I remember seeing – I know you did the live on with Vlad. You were tweeting out one on a Friday night. And I was trying to jump in that so bad, but I couldn't get home in time. I was like, if I'm home, I'm jumping in that draft. And I don't think it ended up filling anyways.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that would have been a fun one. But let's get your thoughts on a few things here, because it's fun to see how different people like to draft here. And you can do 12 or 15 centric, whatever you prefer, whatever your thought process is right now. But let's start with the starting pitchers. Like, you got those elite anywhere from 5 to 7 guys or so that people talk about. Then there's like another pocket. And then you wait a few more rounds, there's another pocket. I always say there's like a total after the aces, there's 2 or 3 like pretty good pockets where you can mix and match. I think that's where a lot of rotations are going to be run. One, obviously, is deciphering that. How are you attacking the starting pitching pockets is what I'm calling them. And maybe your, you know, globs, whatever people want to call them. How are you looking at the starting pitching landscape, I guess?
I think globs a good word because, you know, every year there feels like there's those safe aces, the DeGrom, the Strider, the Cole. You know, this year it's Strider, and then even Burns and Cole and Wheeler don't feel as safe. I have Strider in a tier by himself, and then you kind of have a big glob of guys. So it's kind of finding the value where you can. 12 teams, I'm drafting hitting much more aggressively early. 15 teams, the pitching, you still have to be fairly aggressive. So I am looking to jump in that first tier, or the second tier, we'll call it, to get my quote-unquote ace, which doesn't feel like an ace. So you really got to kind of keep hammering pitching, because you don't really have that insulation that you used to when you take a pitcher, you know, late first, early second round.
Yeah, I'm with you, and that's the troublesome part, because like Cole and Burns, it's just with all the hitting that's out there on the other pitchers, it feels like, do I really want to take a back end first round, early second round pick with those guys, with some of the bats there? Are you considering Glasnow in that second tier of quote unquote aces, or is he farther? Are you more concerned with him?
Glasnow's right there. If he can get 140 innings, I think you're getting a really good ace, and I don't think that's out of the question with him. You're just gonna have to kind of figure out how to manage him throughout the year. The Dodgers can be very frustrating, skipping a guy middle of the week, and you have him in your lineup taking a zero. That is one concern. Yep. But they are going to run a 6-day, if not a 6-man rotation with Yamamoto, which I think will help Glasnow. And that arm is just so good. So I do have him up in my first tier and willing to take the risk at the right price.
100% with you. That's one of the few risky guys, like in years past, I probably never would have looked at, but I've convinced myself, especially in these overall competitions, like he's a game changer at that level if he gets the innings, where, like, you know, Pablo Lopez and some of these other guys are very good. Don't get me wrong, very good. But Glasnow is just light years ahead of them if he can just stay healthy. It's a big if. Big if.
Yep.
And you mentioned attacking hitters more aggressively in 12s, 100% with you. Like, you can almost go at least 4, if not 5 or 6 rounds if you really want to get dicey. I wouldn't probably go that far, but you can if you need to in 12s. But just in general, like, how many pitchers this season are you kind of seeing you leave the first, like, say, 10 rounds with? Is it 2? Is it 3? I know some people are super aggressive. Some are good with, like, those, you know, second and tertiary, you know, globs of pitchers. So how do you feel leaving the first 10 rounds?
You know, doing my analysis from my teams last year and even the previous year, it always feels like you're a pitcher short, whether it's an injury or a guy underperforming. So I told myself I'm going to try to get an extra pitcher that first 10, 11 rounds. So my goal was actually to have 5 pitchers through 10 rounds. That would be 1 closer and 4 starters. It could be 3 starters, 2 closers. But really sacrificing a little hitting in that early round and kind of insulating your arms, because it kind of goes back all the way to the pocket aces, Toby, bat flip phrase or bat flip crazy's theory that, hey, there's a chance one of these guys fails. If one of them fails, I have somebody to back him up. So the more you can insulate that, I think the better.
Yeah. And I remember obviously recording many, many shows with Toby. At first, I'd like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're crazy. But the more you talk about it and run you through it, and just, you know, you start looking at the ratios and this and that, there's a lot of validity to it. Like, there's a lot of things that make sense. And if one gets hurt, you still have an ace. Or if you only draft one ace, you hope he stays healthy. Like, so many factors to it. But it was always kind of, wasn't always felt out of my comfort zone, I guess, which is weird. But to each their own, many ways to draft a baseball team, which is a beautiful thing.
You know what people don't realize, Bubba? That wasn't the pocket aces strategy. That was the JT Realmuto strategy. He had to have him on every team in order to make it work.
And he still does that. He's admitted this year he's kind of backed off the pocket aces a bit. He gets more like two in the first five-ish rounds. JT still gets there. Yeah. So that's still there no matter what. And he probably likes it this year because JT's fallen, you know, a little farther than usual on draft day. Before we talk JT Realmuto and catchers, because it's my show and we have to talk catchers, let's talk relief pitchers real quick. Because you kind of hinted at, you know, maybe, you know, three starters and two closers, four starters, one closer. You know, doing my rankings and talking with Bloomfield about relievers, it feels like there's 20 closers I'd be okay rostering, like, comfortably. Like, there's obviously more after that. Like, you have your elite, you know, let's say eight guys, and there's another group of like seven, and there's like fives, like, okay, they're okay, let's hope they keep the job type situations. So I try to get at least two of the top 20 per se. How are you attacking the closing world? Are you good with some of those just late round, kind of like, look like Rangers or Royals closers, or do you try to stick to the big guys up top?
Yeah, that 20 numbers seems like it's kind of shrinking with Tanner Scott walking. I think he just walked you while we're talking.
he's a whip machine, that boy.
And then Alzolay did not get the vote of confidence from Craig Council, so that's up in the air. So these locked in guys, there was 20 clear cut, and then big cliff. It's shrinking. So I'm definitely trying to get an anchor closer. The problem is there's really not a ton of anchor closers. You get down past probably Raisel Iglesias, and then you have the Evan Phillips, Andres Munoz, Fairbanks, Tanner Scott, Helsley. All of those guys have a question mark. They're not an anchor. And I'm even worried about, as a Giants fan, about Doval and Alexis Diaz, about how extreme their usage was last year. And we all remember the season Edwin Diaz had 50-something saves. The next season, he imploded. The arm could not handle that much usage. So I actually have them down my rankings a little bit. So what I've been doing, Bubba, to answer your question and a lot of words, I'm getting one anchor, and then I'm kind of shopping late. The Texas situation, the Kansas City situation, the Washington situation. There's some opportunities. The Padres. I mean, there's some opportunities, and I've really tried to do a deep dive about who it's going to be, because this is where you make your money. If you can find these cheap closers that you don't have to fab. 12s in the OCs, I love to take one and then just to take four or five specs. Yeah. And then come the first fab of the year, I should know who has the job, who doesn't. They're easy drops, or I have four or five closers. And so I don't like putting the capital in the OCs. The 15 teams are so different because the replacement cost with every team trying to get two closers, it's extreme. If you get in the dark, it's not a fun fabbing.
Yeah, I love how you broke that down. And like the 15s, I'm much more aggressive. Like, I want to have the two because, like you said, A, fabbing, not cool. And just overall, now I got 30 closers technically getting drafted. Every team's closer is quote unquote getting drafted in a 15. So, you know, God pray for you. But on the 12s, yeah, at 12s, you can play the waiting game. Like you said, get a comfortable one that's hopefully getting you 35 to 40 saves, and then you can play the game. Like Robert Suarez, if you believe he's the closer in San Diego, and he's supposed to be for now, he's going super late drafts. Like, really, because everyone likes Matsui. But Suarez is going super late. Robertson, if you do the whole Texas situation with Leclerc, like you mentioned. So if you can play that game, and I do that too. Like, I always do one OC like a day or two before the season, so it's kind of already ironed in. But the ones I do before that, like, you obviously already had your six done. Same philosophy you have. I'll take, like, out of my seven bench spots, I'll have three to five closer specs there for sure. just to kind of see where it lies. Because if not, like you said, hey, you drop them. Those are the easiest drops in the world, and you move on. So it'll be interesting. I'm just really curious to see, do we see more closer turnover this year? Because last year it seemed like the fluky season where everyone just kind of kept their jobs for the most part, and was very strange.
Yeah, if you were planning on fabbing closers last year, good luck, because there was only a handful of them. And, you know, usually you're looking at a closer turnover. And I remember, you remember the Julian Merriweather year in Toronto before Romano really got the job? Everyone's I think he was going for $300-$400 and then he was done. But that's what the price of saves are. That's why it's expensive to get them in the draft, but they're hard to acquire on fab.
Yeah, you have to be extra aggressive. So have fun with all of that stuff. All right, let's talk catchers because, you know, catchers matter. So I love catchers. The pool is extremely deep this year, in my opinion. So I don't mind the elite guys. I have a handful of guys I like waiting on. But I don't want to wait past, like, say, 15-ish dudes if I don't have to. Maybe you can go a little deeper if you want. But there's, like, a 14 to 15 world, like a cliff starts to form. For catchers. So how are you attacking catchers in your leagues right now?
You know, I would rather listen to you talk about catchers because you really have nailed that in the head the last couple of years, and I have really kind of followed your advice, and it's helped out a bit. I'm looking at kind of similar to closer of getting an anchor. I think catcher's deeper than it's ever been. And something that I really didn't figure out it was hurting me as much as it was running with one, if not two, just crappy catchers, and the amount of damage they did to my, not only my batting average, but my rate, my runs and RBIs. You know, sometimes it was even better than starting somebody getting a zero than it was starting a Martin Maldonado. So I think my rankings, I have 16 guys that I'm comfortable with. You know, you look at a Henry Davis too, who is going to get catcher eligibility. How long? I mean, it's going to take a lot longer now with Grandal there, but he is mashing the ball. And I think his ADP is probably going to rise up two or three rounds. But I mean, you'll even look at the Toronto situation with Kirk and
Jansen,
our buddy Jansen, who Jansen over when he plays is probably a top three catcher, but he doesn't play. So there's opportunities up and down. It's deeper than it's ever been, but you still got to spend some capital. And it usually feels like you just plug your nose and make the pick, and you have to do it, and it works out, but you're passing up somebody you'd like better.
That's the biggest thing, is you just have to accept the fact you are going to pass up somebody. That's the reality of it. I don't dislike the idea of getting an anchor, like one of the top five guys, because then you're good to go, and then get one of the final, you know, 6 through 15 or 16. That's a great way to go. Otherwise, I found myself double tapping a lot in that 10 to 15 range, just because it's about to fall off the cliff, like I said. But if you get past that 15, you have 16, which I can understand at that point. Then the rest of them, it gets to the point where I'd almost just go get the backup in St. Louis or the backup in Kansas City and Fermin, and just get their three games a week and don't let them destroy you. Because like you said, some of these guys, it's just such a drop off. It's disastrous in these formats. So don't sleep on catcher just because it's deep is the biggest thing I'd say. And for those of you, I know we're talking a lot of NFBC here. If you play OBPs, I just did an OBP draft with Bloomfield for Tout. Catcher sucks. It's a lot different because these guys are good, but a lot of these catchers in NFBC formats, average formats, they'll hit like 240, and you're like, okay, cool, I can live with that. Their OBPs are like 285, so that will destroy a team's OBP. So don't sleep on them in an OBP format, but that's just a whole other discussion I just want to throw out there for you real quick.
Bubba, are you open to Patrick Bailey as your catcher?
Yes,
too?
Yes, especially in 15s and 12s. I'd rather not. 12s give me the bigger skill set. I'm a huge Bailey fan. I know you watched him as well. The fact he admitted, I've never played this many games, and you could see it because he was hitting so well and just dropped off because they just kept playing him because his glove wouldn't. Well, he's better than Sable, let's just admit it. So like Bailey just kept playing, and he's already bulked up this offseason. He's ready for the full season workload. Great defensively, so he's going to play a ton. I'm fine with that. I'm especially in a 15 as a catcher too. I can live in that world. If you just totally missed and you don't want to force it on a Jake Rogers or somebody else, I'm cool with Patrick Bailey.
Cool.
Yeah. I think that I'm hoping as a Giants fan that there's more there, because it was pretty good for a while when he was healthy. So
yeah, that that start was, I don't think he's going to continue it, but man, if he can do that defense and just, you know, be decent batting wise, he's going to be a great player for a long time.
It feels like for a full season, because with his defense, like he could legit play 140 games. Like it's that good a defense. What's to say he can't hit 15 home runs and hit like 245? Like that's, I think that's in the realm of possibilities. And if he can do that, that's an awesome catcher too in a 15. Like you can live with that in a big way.
It is.
All right. As you've done your early drafts, your OCs, your DCs, prepping for your main events, are there any positions that you're feeling the need to maybe be more? We already talked about getting, you know, five pitchers early. We talked about getting an elite catcher. That's why I always ask this question, because we all want the best of the best, but you start looking at it and it's like, well, now in the first 10 rounds, I probably only have four other spots to take people. And that's just kind of how the builds go. So are you finding a position you feel like you have to be a little more aggressive at than others?
Nothing early per se, other than starting pitcher, starting pitching. You can never have too much. And if you've never played in a main event and you're trying it out for the first time, you're going to be blown away about the prices on pitching. It's just everybody every year talks about it, and it happens every year. It's just, it's crazy. I guess the one position that really seems to fall off a cliff is shortstop. I would really like to have my starting shortstop before around 8 or 9. If you miss, I think after Adames, it gets very questionable. You got some upside guys in Story and Grissom, but it's pretty bleak down there after that. So that would, shortstop would be the one position, and there's so many good players early that I wouldn't mind taking one.
Yeah, no, that's a great call, because we used to always think shortstop is deep, like no big deal. But in the 15s I have been doing lately, it stands out like a sore thumb, how shortstop does drop off after like the Adames area, like you're saying. So it makes you really want to either jump in there early or hope your spec game's really strong, because it does get rough. And again, like you said, that's where some of those early shortstops going. Like that's why I always try to find like a Thyro Estrada if I've already missed out on the earlier guys per se. But there is definitely a cliff. Neto's back there. He's still late. If you believe in Zach Neto, that's one of them. But few and far between, and there's always about three guys that are looking for a shortstop late. So,
wait, Bubba, you like Thyro Estrada? I didn't know that.
Yeah, just a little bit, just a little bit for those keeping track at home. I'm surprised. Like in the rating reviews, I don't get like so many. Can you stop talking about so and so? I'd appreciate it. Like change up the show. any stats now? Like we talked positions. Are there any stats or stat categories, I should say, that stand out needing a little more attention? Steals went up last year. Power is always in a category people talk about needing. That's hitting wise. There's also pitching, but is there any categories that stand out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is just what I've learned through my years in the NFBC. The two categories that you cannot acquire during the season is batting average and whip. We have one hitting, one pitching category. On Vlad and I's pod on the FTN pod or fantasy baseball pod last night, we talked starting pitching, and I basically said I am a whip snob, and I'm hoping RotoWear kind of makes a shirt out of that at some point. We got to pound the table, make that happen. But whip is such an underrated category that people kind of discard, and I did last year. My big auction, I got Kevin Gausman, I got Logan Webb, and I got Shane McClanahan, and it just felt like I had three aces, but none of them had a good whip. And I'm sitting there with a 115, 116 whip between my three aces. I'm only going up from there. So it's just one of those categories you're never going to get better in. There's just no batting average as well. Later in the season, anybody that's getting called up, they might have speed, might have power, but, they're not going to have a good hit tool if they're not on the major league roster to start.
It's such a great point. I know for myself, I'll speak from experience. When I just started playing NFBC, I think like 3 years ago now, I was always just like, no, this. So I did the whole, like, I took the challenge. Let's do qualifiers and satellites. Let's build the bankroll to prove to people you could do it. And so here we are. And it's doable. But I was always kind of one that just ignored batting average, ignored whip. Like, I'd be like, oh, Luis Castillo, awesome. And when he was on the Reds, folks, that was not good for your whip. That was a rough go with Luis Castillo. But, you know, he's an ace, quote unquote. So the more I recorded with smart people, you realize, like you said, you need to pay attention to whips. So that's where pocket aces comes into play, because you get two elite ratios in a big way. How you mentioned getting three to four starting pitchers in the top 10, Because, yes, there are formidable arms as the draft goes on, but you're not getting close to the same ratios. Like, you might get strikeouts, you might get some wins. Like, there's certain things you might get. You ain't getting the ratios more often than not. Same with batting average. So, question for you on the batting average front, which is I've tried to be much more diligent to that. Like, Freddie Freeman used to never be on my board. He's much more interesting to me on the back half of the first round. Michael Harris, loving late second, early third, if that works. Certain guys like that, are you making a point to be more aggressive on those players and maybe passing up a elite speed guy per se or elite power guy, you like, for the batting average?
Absolutely. Okay. Batting average is one of the really kind of key building points of my rosters. I really believe, and Vlad and I talked about this a while ago, when about speed. Do you feel like you can leave speed the first three rounds and not leave the first three rounds and not have any speed and be successful? And the initial thought is no, but I think you can attack steals not only into the draft, but throughout the year. There's plenty of guys that come up and run, but like I said, there's nobody that comes up and really helps your batting average. So yeah, I am definitely focused on that batting average early. That's why, and again, you see in the first round, most of the guys, if not all the guys in the first round, are good batting average. Good batting average helps. You really don't have that big question mark. Maybe Tatis might drag you down a bit. Sure. Matt Olson seems his skills have gotten really good. Lindor, I'm a little questionable on just because of the batting average. Yeah. But he really just, I just can't stress enough how important that solid foundation of the batting average is to kind of be able to take those shots later. And the only other thing, just because you have a good batting average doesn't mean to go start taking Francisco Alvarez and Kyle Schwarber and think you can absorb it all, because it goes away quickly. It
goes away very quickly. That's a great point there. And that's why, especially in 12s, I feel like taking three or four hitters early and then like getting kind of hammering some pitching there for a bit to try to get the last of the good ratios, but hopefully like play that game. We'll see. But it goes to show, like you mentioned, you can find steals, and I'm with you. You late in the draft, your third, fourth, fifth outfielders can all be steals guys. Like I said, I mentioned Zach Neto already. I'm not going to mention the other shortstop I already said. I'm not going to say him, but he gets your steals too. When you're talking about finding steals on the wire, McCabe does a lot of great work on Twitter with kind of evaluating FAB and everything. He's done some really cool stuff. And he did a presentation at First Pitch Arizona. He's done another one online for, I believe, PitchCon. And he mentioned that the most beneficial FAB acquisition last year for winning OC teams was Tanner Scott. And that goes back to the steals or to the saves thing being kind of not a lot of turnover. But the takeaway for me also, and this goes to your batting average point, Ellie De La Cruz, everybody thought that would have been the guy. But if you look at him, okay, you got 35 steals. There you go. You found your steals. Talked about that. Hit 13 home runs. Yeah. He hit .235. He probably hurt your batting average throughout the entire season as he played. He played 98 games. It wasn't just like a short season. So long way of saying, yes, batting average is pretty much a stat you're never going to find on the wire and not going to find much as the draft goes on.
Yeah, I think Jaron Duran was a lot more valuable than Ellie was just because of the batting average, and he was probably a third of the cost, if not more.
Yep, I completely could see that one coming, and that's why I've kind of tempered my fun on Zach Gelof lately. The more I just kind of look at it, I'm just really starting to get concerned with the batting average and how many runs and RBIs he's really going to have.
Gelof the great. Matty Moe and I had him last year, and it was fun every time he'd hit a homer. Oh.
Yeah, I picked him up last year. It was great. But the draft cost this year, not sure I'm ready to go there. Speaking of young players, how much risk are you willing to take on draft day? Kind of when we were talking about news, you kind of felt like me where you kind of need to see guys play type things. So there's rookies, there's injuries, there's a lot of different ways you can attack risk in a draft. How are you in attacking risk?
You know, I feel like I'm being kind of the old curmudgeon, get off my lawn, but I was the shiny new toy guy. I was so guilty of it, trying to be ahead of the market, trying to get the next guy, and it just burnt me year over year. So I'm really more of a risk adverse drafter now. I do look for injury opportunities to kind of take a discount on somebody, but the shiny new toy, we'll just use Wyatt Langford as an example. As much as I want to pull the trigger on him, I'm not drafting him in the top six rounds. It's too big of a question mark. If somebody gets it and he goes crazy, shake their hands and say congratulations. But people, don't really realize how important every bench spot is when there's only seven bench spots in the NFBC. If you use them right, you need seven healthy guys. Maybe one stash, but you start doing two, three stashes, you are asking for problems.
Yeah, Wyatt Langford the other night went at pick 64. So it's getting a little crazy in the streets there, because I'm with you. Even in a drafted recently, he didn't go at 64. He's going closer to his like 120-ish ADP. I was looking at him. I'm like, it was the whole thing where I need him to fall, and I'll take the chance, and he's not going to fall. So I'm it's so, just one of those.
Yeah. I'm so mad I didn't take him when his ADP was 150, 160.
Yeah.
Like, just kicking myself.
The early drafting blues, I'm with you. I did so many DCs and everything else. Like, why did I not take at least a couple chances on this kid? I'm an idiot. But
yeah,
that's who I am. You can't change it just all the time, and you got to roll with it. Any other final draft thoughts? Like I said, you've done the DCs, you've done the OCs, you're getting ready for the mains. Anything the listeners could take away from what you're kind of, you know, picking up through your early drafts?
You know, nothing necessarily from the early drafts. Best advice I've heard, though, is just because you have a lot of shares of somebody now, don't stop drafting them. These are quote unquote our bigger drafts coming up closer to the season. Get your guys. They're two rounds more expensive. I can't draft that guy. If you like the guy, draft your guys, because the price is people. You like guys because of data. You like guys what you're seeing. Everybody's looking at the same data. Everybody's watching the same thing. So don't be afraid to get the guys you're drafting, you know, a month or two ago.
It's a great point. Like, if they're your guys, then price shouldn't matter. So like, get your dude, like you said. I'm at the point where, especially in a couple more weeks for sure, but I'm pretty much getting there. You throw ADP out the window. So you just kind of like, it goes to your point of get your guys. But like, the whole reason we do a lot of these early drafts is kind of getting the flow of the draft room, you know, how you want to build your team. Like, that's kind of what we talked about here in this last little section. And so now when I step into the room, I know the player pool. I have an idea where guys are going. Let's put the puzzle together. That's kind of the plan. So now it's not always easy. It's always easier said than done, as you know, because we're with a lot of sharp drafters in these rooms. But one of the big things you just said there is we're all using the same information. So like, there's a few guys like Phil and company that have a couple, you know, crazy, you know, machines they probably built with numbers that spit out. But the rest of us, we're all using pretty similar information here. So will be fun, to say the least. All right, my friend, we're gonna wrap it up there. That was a fun time talking to you. Before we head on out of here, let everybody know where they can find you and what you and Mr. Vlad Sedler have going on.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, the X Machine, at Boom62. Come listen to Vlad and I's podcast on FTN Fantasy Baseball. If you're in Vegas, they're doing an FTN happy hour at the Mirage on Friday at 3:30. So come on by and get some drinks and come introduce yourself. I'd love to meet everybody. So can't wait to see everybody's happy faces in Vegas. And it's coming quick. 2 weeks from tomorrow, I will be in Las Vegas. So it's hard to believe.
That's outstanding. It's a great time of the year. You know, every time I do these shows, the couple weeks before Vegas, I start getting the itch. I'll go check Southwest after this just for fun to kind of see what's going on. And then something will pop up and I'll be like, oh, can't go now. Of course, that's why I didn't book in the first place. So, we'll see where it goes. I want to go. That's the goal, to go. Maybe I'll surprise people. I'll just show up. Here I am and see how it goes. But everybody, check out Jason and Vlad's podcast, FTN Fantasy Baseball. It's great stuff there. They've done, I think, four or five.
I think five. We just did the starting pitcher episode.
Yep, that dropped in my thing today. So that's on the queue to listen to. So it's great dynamic between the two. Everybody knows Vlad. Vlad's one of the best in the world, best in the industry, best dudes. So go check all that stuff out. Go check out the work at FTNFantasy.com. Their draft guide is just pumping out continual articles. Go check that out. But until next time. You can find Jason on Twitter at Booms62. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 659. Catch y'all later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.